WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. For-profit schools like DeVry University and Grand Canyon University offer career training in fields like healthcare, media production, or cosmetology. They often advertise flexible options for people who feel that a traditional four-year degree program may not work for them, especially first-generation or low-income students, parents, or those returning to school. But the thing is, these schools often fail to place their students in careers. New federal regulations that went into effect on July 1st are cracking down on these schools. A team of WBEZ journalists has been investigating these practices and how students at these schools are being impacted. I sat down with data reporter Amy Chin, Esther Yoon-Gi Kang, who covers race, class, and communities, and Lisa Curion-Phillip, our higher education reporter. I started off by asking how for-profit colleges differ from other types of universities. Here's Lisa.
It sounds obvious, but I think the distinction is super important to call out. So public schools like UIC, for example, are accountable to taxpayers. They get a lot of state and federal funding. But a for-profit school like DeVry, Grand Canyon that you mentioned, they get most of their revenue from tuition. And also they're accountable to owners and investors. So really they're... It's all about the bottom line, right? Like maximizing profits so owners and investors are making as much money as possible and executives are getting paid.
So what's the attraction, though, for potential students? Like, why do they choose that route?
So these schools sort of market themselves to, like, let's say working adults who are parents, who are have full-time jobs that they're managing while they're trying to go back to school to get a degree to make more money. So there's a lot of flexibility that they bake in. Like, you can start now. You know, you may have heard some of those commercials.
Get off the couch.
Yeah, get off the couch. Exactly. It's become so ubiquitous. There's a whole like parody of, you know, those commercials. Mm-hmm. Get off the couch, go get your degree today so you can make money tomorrow. So it's all about that flexibility, like weekend, evening classes. You can start right now. You can get a bachelor's degree in 3 years instead of 4 years. All of this flexibility that really appeals to students who are working, like I said, raising children.
And what are the career tracks that they usually go on with these programs?
A lot of the schools are cosmetology schools, but there are a lot of four-year schools that are, there's a whole school called Chamberlain that we reported on that's mostly nursing degrees, for example. So a lot of like healthcare fields, technical fields, that kind of thing.
Now, of the schools that you looked at, Lisa, how would you characterize the quality of education that students are getting?
Not great.
Is that how they described it to you?
Oh, yeah. The schools themselves? No.
The students.
Yeah, I'm kidding. The students, for sure. We talked to a lot of students who felt like they were getting shortchanged. You know, I think it's important to go back to what these schools are operating for, right? They're operating for profit, and they're very much incentivized to get as many students in the door as possible and even keep them there to keep collecting that the tuition and fees, but they're not incentivized in any way to spend money on instruction. One of the schools we looked at, SAE Institute, here in Chicago, that offers media production degrees, sort of, they were shown to spend only 10% of tuition revenue on teaching. That is a lot lower than public and nonprofit schools. And they're either regulated or incentivized to spend more on instruction than for-profits are.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Amy, why don't you explain how we actually measure whether schools are effectively educating their students?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things we looked at, but I think the first question we asked is, you know, whether these schools are clearing the lowest bar we have for them, which is, are they making more money than they would have if they hadn't gone to a for-profit school, if they had just graduated high school or gotten their GED? And what we found was pretty insane. Just 1/3 of for-profit schools graduate students who make more than a high school grad, compared to nonprofits where more than 80%, public schools and nonprofits, where more than 80% of their students are making more than a high school grad. And so that stat alone was shocking to us. For cosmetology schools, it's even worse. None of the schools had median earnings higher than a high school grad. But we also looked at, you know, a couple of other things. We looked at their graduation rates, which we found were lower for for-profit schools than nonprofits and public schools. Debt was higher. You know, we also did a survey, shout out to Al Keefe and Stephen Arroyo, who are our engagement producers. But we surveyed 250 plus for-profit students in Illinois. We asked them about their experiences, what their income was, how they paid for their education, how much student debt they took on. And by and large, I mean, the responses were just overwhelmingly that, like, you know, they felt like they hadn't learned enough. They felt like they weren't prepared for the degrees that they were supposed to get. Didn't get licensing. So just across the board, there were so many kind of indicators that the education was of lower quality.
Can you paint a picture here, Lisa, on some of the students that you talked to, particularly Nika Ewing?
Yeah,
what was her story?
Yeah. So she started at DeVry because she saw a commercial promising that she could get a bachelor's degree in 3 years instead of 4 years and job placement within 6 months after that. It has now been 5 years. She's still not done. She thinks she'll be done in December. And she's applied to jobs left and right because along the way she's gotten 2 associate's degrees from DeVry and she hasn't had any bites. And she sort of gets the sense that employers look down on her degree because it's from DeVry. And I heard that from multiple students. Like another DeVry student told me she got the sense and she heard from recruiter friends that they would see a resume with DeVry on it and go straight in the trash. So
there's a stigma there for sure.
Yeah, there's that stigma there. So she's cleaning houses to make ends meet right now. And she has will graduate with more than $60,000 in student debt.
Goodness. So Esther, if they're not properly educating these people, not properly preparing them, as we've been hearing from Amy and Lisa, where is this money going?
Well, Lisa alluded to this earlier, but they're spending a lot of money on marketing. I mean, we're talking YouTube, TikTok, local TV ads, signs on public transportation. We've seen them all, right? So there's actually research by the Brookings Institution. It's a Washington, D.C. think tank. It says for-profit institutions spend nearly $400 on advertising per student. And that, if you compare that to nonprofit schools, nonprofit schools spend $48, not $400.
Oh, goodness.
And then public schools spend $14 per student on advertising.
And so who are they trying to reach? Who are their targets here?
Their targets generally are Black and brown students, first-generation college students, low-income students. And, you know, the term that people use for this is predatory inclusion. It's when a marginalized group gets access to services and places that they normally couldn't get before, but the terms are bad. The terms are harmful to them, and they leave people worse off. And so if you think of, like, in the mortgage industry and home lending, the subprime mortgage, this is essentially that in education.
Yeah.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
So a lot of these for-profit colleges, they're cosmetology schools, as we alluded to earlier. That's where 29-year-old Melina Moss went, Esther. You talked with her. What was her dream?
Well, Melina had this dream. I mean, she watches TikTok videos about lash extensions, and she saw some, and she was like, this looks so awesome. I love this. I could do this. She talked to the girl that did her lashes, and apparently she's doing well, and so she wanted to be a lash specialist. And so Melina had just gotten laid off from a manufacturing job last year when she found out about this potential career, and so she wanted to change careers. She learned that she needed an esthetician's license to be able to do lashes from home or from a studio. And so she called a school nearby, the Tricochi University of Beauty Culture, the Bridgeview campus, and called a number. And then, of course, once you call that number, the recruiter will be on you, you know, for the next several days and weeks, trying to get you, promising you what you could get. And so that's how Melina's journey there started.
Oh, my goodness. And so tell us more about what her actual experience at the school was like, because I imagine that recruiter won and got her in, right?
Yeah. And so her story is very typical. A lot of students told me that the recruiters promised them things that they never got. So in Melina's case, she never got the lash training. She never got the certificate.
She never got the lash training?
Right, because you had to pay extra, but the recruiter didn't tell her. So she couldn't afford that. And then also the lash classes were at the same time as other classes for her esthetician license. And so she, you know, it was a very uneven education. On top of that, she also got, you know, what she calls very subpar instructors, a lot of strange sort of personalities in the mix. Mm-hmm. Even the facilities were subpar. And so there's, you know, there's students that actually just go to these schools to fulfill their hours. They sit there and chat with other girls and spend their hours there like that. Some people have to fill out just workbooks and spend their time like that. Others just watch videos and do instructional games. So
Filling the time.
And mind you, these schools also use students' labor for free in their salons. So that's another.
That's right, because they usually take in like real clients.
Yep, absolutely.
Amy, is there another way? I mean, do people have to go to these for-profit programs to get their licenses?
Unfortunately, yes. Like in Illinois, we looked at the data, 80% of cosmetology schools are for-profit schools. And the ones that aren't advertised as well, they're not as in your face.
Truman this is College. Happening for like barber school too, right?
Yeah. For barber schools as well is actually worse. But the population of students is smaller. But Truman College has a cosmetology program. Half the price, yeah, exactly. You probably are learning, you know, you're learning the same things. It's not like you're getting a worse education. But these schools are just so in your face with advertising and recruiting that students feel like they have no other options. And because they have to get these licenses, you know, they just have to go to these for-profit schools. And I think the other thing that it points to is just in general, the lack of options for students of color, first-gen students who are, you know, not as like aware of the college process, not as aware of what they should be paying attention to. And like Esther said, it's predatory inclusion. These schools are fulfilling an unmet need to educate folks who hadn't taken the SAT, for example.
Mm. So on that note, Lisa, is this legal? Like, what is the regulation around for-profit colleges?
It is very loose because there's the for-profit industry has a very strong lobby. And even, you know, like in the 2000s, when these schools were really taking off, there was a lot of bipartisan support for for-profit schools. And I will add, too, like, as public funding for, like, here in Illinois, state funding for public colleges has really decreased over the past couple decades. And as Amy said, these schools are kind of stepping into this void. But these rules will require basically schools to prove that their students are making more than a high school grad, and then also that they're making enough income to pay off the debt that they incur during their degrees. And if they fail these metrics 2 out of 3 years, they could lose their access to getting federal student loan.
The caveat there being that, you know, once the Trump administration If the Trump administration comes back in.
You said once the Trump administration.
We caught that. Excuse me. Sorry.
We heard that answer.
I'm sorry. Wow, that could be a really bad. Okay. I should mention that this regulation has origins in the Obama administration, but it was scrapped by the Trump administration in 2019. So this is really depending on, you know, who we
have. Yeah, enforcement has been so uneven of for-profits in general, depending on who's in power in the White House.
Well, even before this regulation going into effect today, I mean, your reporting makes reference, Amy, to a federal settlement for people defrauded by their colleges, right? Some people had tens of thousands of dollars of debt canceled because of that. But the schools are still up and running?
Crazy.
So the
settlement, this specific settlement was in 2022. There's a class action that basically said, hey, the Department of Education needs to essentially wipe all student loans for around 200,000 students who went to a list of 150 schools.
Yeah.
So on that list are DeVry or Chamberlain, but also schools that are now shut down like Argosy. And like you said, a good number of them are still open. The majority of those schools are for-profit schools. But I think that just points to just kind of a broader lack of awareness. You know, the settlement should be the first thing that people see when they apply to these schools, but it's not. They're instead, you know, met with a recruiter who's sweet talking them and telling them about all the money that they could make. And so, yeah, it is crazy.
My goodness. And at one point, even Senator Dick Durbin got into this fight.
Durbin's been in this fight for a long time. He's, you know, been sort of talking about this issue for many years. He even has a letter to principals and counselors every year, sending them a list of, hey, these are some bad players. Please do not recommend these schools to your students.
Sending these to the high schools?
Right.
Yeah.
High schools in all over the state. And so he's been on this. He's introduced a lot of legislation in the past. But, you know, of course, things are slow in Congress.
Boy, am I glad you three were on this reporting. We've been speaking with WBEZ's Esther Yunji Kang, Amy Chin, and Lisa Curion Phillip. Now, you can read their two-part investigation on for-profit colleges online. It's up at WBEZ.org. Thank you all so much.
Thanks for having us.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Jules Yeager, mixed by Max Lubers, and edited by Meha Ahmed. Are you a fan of Reset? Well, tell your friends about us or consider leaving us a rating. It helps more people find us. And if you have feedback, you can always reach us at reset@wbez.org. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.